Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, April 14th, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. I hope you're doing well.
I'm outstanding today, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And it's great to have you here. John Martellaro, how are you?
I am good this morning.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. And we might as well just jump into the topics.
Hey, I know what the topics are, Jeff. Can I ask that that we not start with the FBI today?
You know, Dave, because I like you so much, we're not going to start with the FBI today.
I just feel like it might be more interesting for us and for the listeners, you know.
Yeah, well, we mix it up. It's how this is how we keep the mystery and excitement in our relationship.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we'll talk non-FBI right now. And actually, Dave, this totally plays into you because you wrote or actually recorded a really great video tip where you talk about how we can figure out how our broadband modems are handling the traffic that's passing through them.
Yeah, well, it's actually, certainly the modem is part of it, but the tip that I was putting up today is more about the router.
Excuse me, I meant to say router.
No, but it's a good, I'm glad you unintentionally did that because it's an important distinction. And for the most part, I'm talking about cable modems here, but it really, and this will apply to any connection because, again, it's about your router, which may be something you get from your internet provider, or it might be something you provide on your own.
Well, I'll play the straight man.
Thanks.
Gee, Dave, I don't understand. What's the difference between a modem and a router?
Well, the modem is what allows you to get bandwidth from your provider. And the router is what allows you to share that bandwidth with multiple devices in your house.
Okay. So the little box that plugs into the coax cable, that's my modem. And the other box, or potentially the same box, that has all the little plugs that I stick all my Ethernet cables into, that's the router.
Yeah, that's right. But you're right that it could be the same box. But what we're talking about here is testing the router's ability to handle a full load of traffic. Your cable modem will, however you get your bandwidth, be it over a cable modem, be it fiber, be it DSL, it doesn't matter. There is likely to be a limit on the amount of data that can pass through that pipe. Okay. And the problem is once you hit that limit, all other data potentially gets slowed down. Okay, because you're hitting this limit, right? And so if you've got one device that's just like pouring data in one direction or another across that pipe, and another one that just wants to go out and check email, well, it needs to get in line behind these other devices and behind this other bandwidth. And that can be a problem because the cable modem has to kind of artificially put a limit on that bandwidth. Otherwise, you'd just get unlimited bandwidth from them. And A, that doesn't exist because there's no such thing as truly unlimited. And B, nobody provides that right now. Everything is, you know, you have a cap. And I'm not talking about the amount of data that you can send over a month. I'm talking about the speed of the connection that you have. So to deal with that, your router needs to be aware of how well traffic is going across that link that's beyond it. And some routers deal with this very well on their own. Some of them require a feature called quality of service or QoS to be enabled to do exactly that, to guarantee you a quality of service. And then some routers just don't deal with it well no matter what you've done, whether or not there's quality of service enabled or not. And the way to test for all of this is...
Dave, before you go into the test part, I have a question.
Yes.
Does increasing your service speed assist with that? For example, I mean, if you're downloading big files and you had a 50 megabit per second service instead of 5, then there wouldn't be so much competition.
Well, there would be less time if you're band, if the amount of data you need to transfer doesn't change and you increase from 5 to 50, then the amount of time that you're going to be soaking up the entire downstream, in your case, because it's downloaded data you're downloading, will be less, right? Mm-hmm. Because it will be, in fact, 10 times less because of the difference between 5 and 50. But when that data is being downloaded, no, the problem will be exactly the same.
Because
because as long as you're soaking up the either downstream or upstream, then this problem can happen. And while it certainly happens on the downstream, most people will experience these lags and slowdowns when something is uploading. And oftentimes it's something they don't even know about in the moment, a backup running, your iPhone syncing all your photos to either PhotoStream or iCloud Photo Library. Your wife is downloading Windows 10. Yeah, exactly. Right. These things. And so what you need is your router. You need to be able to trust that your router is going to handle those scenarios so you don't have to plan for them and say, hey, whoa. It used to be when I would record Mac Geek Gab, I had to tell my wife, look, don't upload photos while I'm doing that because it screws up our bandwidth. That's not a good environment to live in. So you need to learn to fix it. But the first thing you need to learn to do is identify when it's bad and also when it's good, so you'll know if you fixed it. And the way to do that is, or one way to do it, and we explain this on Mac Geek Gab, is to start a speed test. But before you start the speed test, go to your terminal and use a utility called ping. And I recommend pinging www.apple.com. When you type that, ping space www.apple.com and hit enter, your terminal is going to start every second sending a packet out to Apple and waiting for it to return.
So basically, when you ping, it's like saying, hey, are you there? And then in this case, apple.com says, yes, I'm here.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly right. Yeah. And what you're looking for is it will report the number of milliseconds that turnaround takes. The are you here? Yes, I'm here to get back to you. Whatever that number is, just let it run for 15, 20 seconds so you get used to seeing what that number is. Then go run a speed test. By very definition, a speed test is going to soak both your downstream and your upstream, usually not simultaneously. Usually it's one direction and then the other. Watch the pings while the speed test is happening. And if those pings swing upward, it means that turnaround between you and Apple now just got longer. And if it swings upward while the speed test is happening and then downward after the speed test, one could assume that the speed test or the nature of soaking the connection is what's causing that problem. Now, the amount that it swings might or might not be of issue. If it swings by, say, 30 or 40 milliseconds, that's okay. It's not great. It shouldn't be swinging at all. Mm-hmm. But if it swings by 30 or 40 milliseconds, no problem. If it swings by hundreds of milliseconds or thousands, remember, 1,000 milliseconds is a full second, that's a really bad thing. Thankfully, DSL Reports has a speed test that does this, so you don't need to look in your terminal, and it'll also give you a grade. So you don't really even need to think about whether or not what those numbers are. Speedtest.dslreports.com will do this. It's an HTML5 speed test. It'll work on your phone, but I recommend doing it on your computer and preferably a computer that is connected via Ethernet. Otherwise, you're going to wind up testing your wireless connection at the same time, and you sort of want to eliminate variables.
That makes sense.
Yep. So you do this, and if you get a B or better on the buffer bloat portion of your speed test, because that's what this is called, is when you have the pipe soaked and one. And your pings slow down, it means that the router's buffer is bloated. There are too many things waiting to go out that should just go out or come back in. If your buffer bloat is worse than a B, it's an A through F grade. If it's worse than a B, then you might want to think about doing something with your router, either turning on quality of service if it has it, or perhaps you just need a faster router. And this is why one of the reasons that CPU speed of routers matters, because it's a lot of work for a router to decide what to do with all these packets you know, sort of instantaneously, and CPU speed helps them.
Okay.
Tangentially, I want to talk
especially
a little
bit. Especially when it's doing packet inspection for security.
Yeah, if you're also doing firewalling, well, and even just NAT routing where it needs to decide which computers the packets go to. I mean, there's lots and lots going on, and it all needs to happen in real time. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say we have listeners that are hearing this right now, and they're thinking, okay, I'm sure I don't have a problem because I went over to Best Buy several months ago, and I bought a 5-port gigabit Ethernet switch, so I'm fine.
You might be. It's worth testing, and that's really the only way to know. I could start listing off models of routers that I've tested, but it's irrelevant. It's just way easier to just test on your own. If you need something, if your router isn't doing a good job, and this is why I wanted to talk about QoS as part of this, the current crop of Netgear routers, really anything with the model number 7000 or up, so 7000, mm-hmm. 7500, 7800, 8000, 8500, they all have dual core CPUs in them and can handle the kinds of speeds that most cable companies are going to throw at you. In fact, probably even more than that. So quality of service is an interesting thing. What basically, when you enable quality of service on your router, what you're telling it is, and Netgear's great about this because they actually do a speed test, so you don't have to. It doesn't mean that, you know, Netgear's the only game in town. In fact, lots of router manufacturers have QoS, and most of them do it fairly well. They just all do it a little bit differently. When you enable QoS, what you do is you tell the router, hey, here's the maximum speed I want you to go, both in download speeds and upload speeds. And here's the hard part. You need to give your router a speed that's lower than the speed you get from your cable company. So if you get, say, 150 megabits down, and when you test it, it comes to 175, that's what Comcast does. They sell you 150 down and 10 up. When you do that, you actually get about 175 down and maybe 12 up. You need to tell your router in that case, cap me at 165 and cap me at 11 up, not 12. So you're actually going to shave some off of your speed, but that's the point, is you don't ever want to load your cable modem with the full speed that it can do, because then your router can't, then your router has no control over it. But if your router can control it up to that speed, then the router can allow all traffic to go very, very quickly, because it knows that it's never going to hit the maximum speed of the cable modem.
So it's
hard to stomach, because, you know, you're actually intentionally slowing your internet speeds down, but you're doing it so that the quality of your connection remains high.
Okay. So now for people
that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Oh yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah. I like this. Okay. So now for people that go the easy route and they go and buy an Airport Extreme base station to use as their router, is there anything they can do?
Nope.
So it's just, so in the case of an Airport Extreme, it just simply is what it is, and you have no control over the settings.
That's the right way to say it. But that's not necessarily a condemnation of Apple's software in the router. I will condemn their software, but that's not the condemnation I'd give it. I don't like their software because it doesn't give you a lot of options. However, one thing Apple does, and other router manufacturers do this too, even though they don't offer you a QoS setting, they give you their software tries to deal with this on its own. It's typical of Apple, and I don't say that in a negative light. I mean, Apple tries to sort of solve these problems that you don't even know you're going to have. I have not tested an Apple router this way, at least not one of the new crop. But it's possible if you have an Airport Extreme and you wire up your Mac to it and do this DSL reports test, you may come in at a B or even an A on the buffer blowout. And if you do, then leave it alone. Don't worry about it. You're good to go.
All right. Sounds good. Cool. This is really useful because I have often wondered where the bottlenecks in my connections are. And my guess is that this is where I need to be looking.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. Thank you. Okay, so now we'll hit our other topic, which no surprise at this point, is the FBI. But it's... Okay, so here's the deal. Last week, I wrote my opinion. No, I'd say it's more than opinion. My educated belief that the FBI did not find anything on Syed Farouk's iPhone. And so this is the iPhone that the police recovered from the San Bernardino shootings. This is the iPhone that's been the center of the whole fight between Apple and the FBI over protecting encryption and whether or not companies should be forced to write software to bypass their own security features. And so I said that there's nothing of value on the iPhone. And my basis for that was from the time the FBI announced they had a hack available to them to the time that they said, we are still investigating and it's too early to say, was a full 2 weeks. And what it really takes to be able to see what is on a device like an iPhone and determine if there is evidence that's usable as part of an investigation is about 24 hours. So even if we say from the day they announced that they were in the iPhone to the point that they said we're still investigating, that was still a full week.
There's another factor too, Jeff, that has kind of got dropped through the cracks. Way early in this process, I read an article that I've never seen since that this couple had private phones.
Oh, yes, I've talked about that quite a bit.
Those were destroyed by them. And this phone, this 5C that the FBI was trying to break into was a San Bernardino County Health Department of Health issued phone.
That is correct.
So you would suspect that if they had private phones and they had an employer issued phone, they would probably keep sensitive information off that employer issued phone too.
Especially since they destroyed their personal phones. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that brings us up to where we are now. And we have an unnamed source inside the law enforcement community that has come forward and told CBS News there wasn't anything on the iPhone that they could use.
Is this the same guy who would have leaked the government OS to the hacker community?
That's a good question. Government OS being the operating system the FBI wanted Apple to make and got a warrant or a court order to force Apple to make. But in the end, Apple didn't have to do it.
I don't know. I'm just wondering. It's the first thing came to my mind.
Yeah, well, it does raise concerns over the government's ability to keep something out of the public's hands, or at least away from the public eyes, if they are sharing this information when they're not supposed to.
And this is very damaging, too. I mean, it would never be considered an intentional leak because it would undermine the idea that the FBI felt it was very, very important to break into this phone.
Dave, you've been surprisingly quiet.
Well, I talked a lot in the beginning, and I didn't want to step all over you guys. What more is there to say? I don't know. It's the whole thing has been... There has been a lack of truthfulness coming from everything we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so none of this surprises me at all. Just kind of, it's, you know, I don't know that I have more to say on this. I've ranted a lot about it.
Well, what amuses me about this, and I don't know if amuse is the right word, but what is enlightening is that the FBI tried some legal tactics and they were outclassed by Apple's legal team, even though the FBI's guys are really good. They tried some trial balloon tactics in public relations, and they pretty much got blistered by the Twitter and social community. So it seemed to me like they went into this with kind of like a, you know, big man on campus FBI law enforcement approach, and they got kind of schooled and how the community is thinking and how really good attorneys could deal with their case. So
certainly in terms of the tech community, they got schooled. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, and I mentioned this yesterday, but in the polls that I saw as all this was sort of unfolding, that were the polls that were hosted by sort of what I'll call major news outlets, the, you know, the CNNs of the world, the New York Times, those, and I don't know if the New York Times did one, but all the sort of major media polls that happened were about 50-50 when they asked, should Apple help the FBI or not? So, but I think you're right. I just think it's important that we see both the percentage of people in kind of the tech circles that saw and how they reacted. And I think probably it's closer to, you know, 70-30 or 80-20 even in favor of Apple doing what they did. But the general populace was about 50-50. I have to assume then, based on the FBI's reactions, which you summarized pretty well, that they were expecting it to be a lot more in their favor in the general public's view. Otherwise they would not be acting like they are.
Yeah, I think that's because the general public was perhaps half sort of not very informed and went about their business and just obliquely learned about this and said, the FBI ought to help. And then the other half was going, well, I've read some stuff about this and I'm kind of concerned now.
I would like to think that too. Yeah. Mr. Chaffin yesterday said that a lot of it was people just blindly putting their faith in the government, even with the information. And I'm not overly convinced that's a huge segment of the population, but maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. I don't know. We have a self-selecting audience.
That's so true. We do.
It's hard for us to truly envision that, because by nature, you folks that listen to us, by nature, you don't always agree with what we say, but you want to be informed. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to people dissecting things like this. So,
true. Hey, we are out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. What I will say to wrap all this up is my big surprise out of this is not that we have someone validating what I laid out last week, but that it happened this fast. I really felt that it would be a couple more weeks before someone finally decided that they were just going to sneak the information out to the media. So, yeah. But hey, you know, now we know sooner. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Always a blast.
Yeah, and John, thank you for being here.
My pleasure as well.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.